Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. This is Nazarita Goldhammer, Kevin Boylow. We're at Epis Radio. It's August 15th, 2022. I was just recently, this morning, looking at a picture of my dog, Batai, from, it's about 10 years ago, and we were in Missoula, Montana, a very beautiful Victorian building at the Fort Missoula, where we used to walk and run. It was next to a river called the Bitterroot River. Absolutely gorgeous. And in a way, that is a lead into our show today, which is about climate change, the self, and reflective design. And I want to just say we want to bring forth the themes today of virtue, mercy, compassion, empathy. We want to talk about coexistence. We want to talk about the interrelational self. We want to talk about the alienated self. And so I wanted to say there's something curious about the way people talk about climate change. I'm pretty keen on words, and we talk about it as if it's a thing, like a problem to solve. For example, my car breaks down on the highway, I've got a problem to solve. But I think that climate change is much more than a problematic to be solved. It's also an ontological condition. When we look at the destruction of our biosphere and the many ecosystems, the aquifers, all the life forms that we're a part of. So climate change is, yes, it can be viewed as a scientific problem, a social problem, et cetera, but it's more than that. It's reflective of the way we are. And as I joked earlier today, we're becoming Mercury. We're becoming Mercury. If you look at, go to the NASA website, they have really beautiful, just spot on science, as you would expect. And you can see pictures of the heated Earth. It's hot. We live in a heated Earth. And whoever you are, no matter where you are, ultimately you're not going to be able to escape what we've done. At Earth Science Design Research, we're working on an eco-shelter prototype. And it occurs to me that's going to become as much of importance as, you know, just a beautiful space. We're in a survival mode. So recently, Norwegian officials they euthanized a walrus because would become very popular because people were afraid she was going to hurt them. So we killed her. And to me, it's just heartbreaking. Finally, the governor of the state of Washington signs an executive order protecting the 73 remaining orcas in the Puget Sound, of which their sister, Lolita, is in the Seaquarium in Florida. So they don't say 74 orcas. They say 73, but she's the 74th. And she happens to be imprisoned. So we get all bent out of shape because some 6'3" basketball star is imprisoned in Russia, but we don't seem to get uptight about this Holocaust, and I mean it with a capital H, against all of us. The Holocaust was the worst of the worst of human behavior. And I think about it a lot. And I think about the Holocaust against animals. And so we've gotten ourselves in this position where the words mercy, compassion, and empathy become just words. They're floating little signifiers. But in this nihilistic world, they don't really have much force and effect. In other words, mercy becomes something for the nun. Compassion, something for the priest or the rabbi. And empathy, something for the psychotherapist or the psychologist. That's my point. So climate change is much more than a problem to solve. It's something inside where we have educated people actually arguing that we need to harm animals for research or harm them for food or harm them for clothes. It's insane. And to make specious arguments that we have to keep doing this is heartbreaking. And so I'm making a public proclamation. I will give no quarter to anyone anymore. I don't care what they think or what they feel about that. And I'm not going to be nice about it anymore. We have crossed the Rubicon. And this is my world too. And every time an animal gets killed or harmed, I get killed or harmed. Psychotherapy, something I know a lot about based upon the principles of humanism. Most therapists have no idea what that means. None. They might be able to write a paragraph on it. But they don't know it and they don't understand it. We, at the EPIS Psychoanalytic Institute, we're working hard to develop a whole new paradigm of psychoanalysis, phenomenology, psychology, critical theory that puts the human in a very different position. It's not always about us. We are one player. We're like in this great big symphony orchestra. You know, we're the clarinets. But we're not the conductor, and we shouldn't be the conductor. And we are wrong-headed into ever thinking that we were the conductor. And many religious figures now are, in my view, falling short of their duty. They're afraid. They're afraid. And they've become the problem to solve. So we're talking about virtue. Well, virtue means, in the West, to live a life of goodness, but not only for yourself or for your family, but goodness for all. It means to serve the all, the whole. And that means you put down your possessions. That means you have to stop living in accordance with what you own and what you have. It has to stop. It's born of fear and anxiety, and it has to stop. It's what leads to world wars. And nobody else is going to do it. You have to take your own responsibility. So we've talked about responsibility last time. It means speaking up. It means getting in people's face. That's what that means. And I'm really tired of the person who would say, well, I don't want to offend my family. I don't want to offend my friend. I don't want to offend my organization or my church. How could we possibly let etiquette override survival? Or etiquette override the moral catastrophe that we perpetrate on animals? So when you examine the whole idea of etiquette and being nice socially, it's about keeping peace. It's about keeping the current status quo. So let's talk about mercy. Let's talk about compassion. Let's talk about empathy. I've got Nazarita here. Let's bring it on, Nazarita. Let's talk about mercy. Let's talk about compassion. Let's talk about empathy. Let's talk about coexistence with the other. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, we said that we would talk about this last week, so I've really been thinking about what is compassion. And, you know, I've done a lot of things in my life against non-human others. I used to eat chicken, meat, and fish, though I was not a huge consumer of them. I still consumed them, and I didn't actually connect the dots of what was merciful or compassionate. And yet I strived in my daily life for compassion and mercy. And I actually thought I was being a really good human being to strive for those things. I did dance, I did meditation, I chanted, I fasted. And then I began to find out about how other species were treated. And really, when you really see something, that's the dividing road. That's where you make your choice. You're either going to be complicit in murder and torture, or you're going to be compassionate and merciful. What do those two mean? So my choice was, once I saw how animals were treated, I realized I could never eat meat. I could never eat a chicken or a fish, or eggs or dairy, because the treatment that went on to others was so heinous that once you realize that you can't put your head back in the sand, as they say, you can't think to yourself, I'm not going to see that anymore. I'm going to go right back to what I was doing. And I realized that it didn't really matter what spiritual practices I had. If I wasn't going to actually live them, it was okay to save them. And it was okay to posture myself as someone who was a spiritual being, but to not live that spiritual life, you become an imposter. And everybody realizes that you are an imposter, because under situations of duress, or when you learn about something, you continue to do that which is harmful. That is the opposite of compassion and mercy. It is the opposite of what most people are really wanting in their lives. And that's the disparity that we're seeing, is that people want to embrace compassion, mercy, kindness, generosity, but it's in direct opposition to the way that they're living their lives. If there's a disconnect. And once you make that connection that your actions show what you believe, it isn't your belief that influences your actions. Your actions actually show really what you believe. Remember that the book Dorian Gray? And his face became, half of his face became what he thought and who he was. It was evil. And that's what you begin to learn. And everything that I've seen is that if you don't live your convictions, when you know something, if you decide that you're not going to follow that which you now know is right, it influences your health, it influences your mental capacity, it influences your emotions, it influences your relationships, it influences everything that we are. And people don't see that a lot of harmful effects are coming from that disparity between the virtues that we seek to embrace and know that we want in our actions. And I believe that's the big force of, that's why I really felt strongly about Gandhi. Is Gandhi, Martin Luther King, when they saw something, they knew they had to stand up for it. They couldn't go back to not knowing. You can't go back to not knowing once you know it. Once you see a video of how cows are treated, how baby chickens are ground up, and how lambs are treated, and how cattle are treated, and how we murder everything and we hunt and we have hunting farms, you can't go back. Because if you go back, what you're doing is you're erasing all the spiritual compassion and empathy and kindness that you thought you were embracing. And your body will suffer. I think that that's, sometimes people have to hear, like, what will happen to them. Like, they can pretend, wear the ribbon, wear the turban, wear the malas, wear anything that they want that symbolizes the spiritualness that they seek to embrace. But if you don't live it, those things mean nothing. They are meaningless. They don't hold the energy of aliveness, and your body will suffer, and everyone else will suffer too.
Right. So when you connect the covenant of responsibility to the virtues of compassion and mercy and empathy, you know, what do you get? You get a new human. And it is a covenant. So here's for me, it has to be a really, I wouldn't even call it a high standard. It has to be a forever standard. And it's an everyday standard. You don't get to take time off from being a good person. And I'm so tired. I'm actually tired of it. People talking about, well, I need to take care of me. I need to be balanced. I need to work on this for myself. I have these projects for me. Me. It's all about my and me and my and me and my family, my shitty little nephews and nieces, my shitty little siblings, all of my extended family. There's got to be more than that. We live in tribalism, and global warming is an alias. It's a code now that says, if you don't start acting better, we're done. You don't get to take holiday. And that's another thing. We've been duped into believing that holiday is somehow going to make us better people. Read Marcus Aurelius, the great Stoic general. You take a holiday every day. It's every day. It's not where you spend your 10 grand and go find a holiday. The analog for me is the whole industry of meditation. It's a joke. In my view, American meditation is largely a joke. It's somebody else says how to meditate. Somebody else has their little methodology, their little plan, their format, the things you say, just like reading verses in church or the things we say in the synagogue or the mosque. Deeper than that. It's deeper than that. It's at the level of being. It's at the genesis of everything. And so, can you meditate every day while you're working for the other? Yes. It's not that hard. Can you serve yourself as you serve the other? Yes. It's not a win-lose proposition. Everything that you do can serve the other as it serves you. The same. We're the same. And if we can start thinking about it in that way, it doesn't become a tension and a polarization. It doesn't become a resentment. It doesn't become a life of scarcity. You'd be surprised as to how many people are afraid that they're going to be out on the street and lose their shirts. That's the wrong way. I tell people who talk to me that way, oh, well, you need to give more. And I do the same thing for myself. If I'm ever afraid or I'm ever anxious about my own situation, and by the way, this is the key. This is the key to good psychotherapy. It is the key. I say, give more. Give your shirt. Give your fruit bowl. Give your money. Give everything you can. Continue to give away and give away and give away and give away. To me, that's mercy. To me, that's compassion. But you're right, Nazarita, there. We actually grind little baby male chicks. We grind them up. They're just born. They're vulnerable. I've seen this. They're just coming into the awakening of existence. And they're the most beautiful, soft, gentle little pieces of life. We grind them up so that some asshole can have a chicken dinner. And I say to you who eat the chicken dinner, you are an evil person. You're violent. You're selfish. You're evil. What I also say to people is, great, you want to eat meat? You want to eat dairy? Go ahead, but be honest. Be honest that you're a violent person. Don't be dishonest about it. If you want to eat meat and dairy and you want to be violent, go for it. But for God's sakes, don't lie about it. Then we can have a conversation. Then we can talk about your violence. And that's the key to nonviolent resistance. It's to never fight violence with violence. But it does not mean to be passive. It means to stop the violent. And if you're eating meat, you're a violent person. I'm going to stop you. If you're eating dairy, you're a violent person. I'm going to stop you. If you wear the clothes that belong to animals, I'm going to stop you. If you're going to pollute my river, I'm going to stop you. If you're going to pollute and destroy the Amazon rainforest, I'm going to stop you. I'm going to give every ounce of my life to stopping you. Why? Because this is mercy. We need to have mercy, not just in the pew. We need to have mercy towards all life. Always, 100% of the time. If you see somebody being mean to their child, you need to stop them. Being mean or neglectful to a canine, you need to stop them. A lot of violence is hidden. It's hidden because people hide it away, but a lot of it is hidden because we've chosen not to see it. And I think that's part of what you're getting at. At least that's an element I'm picking up on, Nazarita, that we have so engaged in self-deception. You know, I have a friend, a colleague of mine. I don't talk to him so much more. He actually believes that animals don't have language. Only human beings can have language. Humanism, penalty, wrong. F. F to the professor. You are wrong. The research is definitive now. We always knew it, but the research is definitive now. Fish are really smart. Fish are ocean fish, freshwater fish. They're very smart. They're cognitively astute. They're interrelational. They work together, and they have empathy. Well, there's a lot of people who think you're nuts if you say that, or to say that plants are sentient or trees are sentient. Humans are not the foundation of life. That's wrong. And whichever nitwit came up with that idea, must go down in history as wrong. Life is at the foundation. This is material phenomenology. The visible, what we bring into existence and how we bring it into existence. This is ontology. We make these choices. And God bless people like Krishnamurti and David Bohm for getting it right, and Alain Badiou for getting it right, and Einstein, a man of great mercy and compassion, Albert Schweitzer, a man of inestimable compassion. I would rather starve to death than to harm another being. I can't do it. I won't do it. So we are, as Kierkegaard saw, more than anybody else I've ever read, ever, he was able to say it, alienated. And alienation means to be at a distance from. We're at a distance from life. And we're in a situation right now where the predominant algorithm is not to survive, and it's not to live, and it's certainly not to live well. It's to kill ourselves. A lot of people will listen to that, and they'll say, well, you know, how could that be, Kevin? Well, we'll listen to you because we know in the end you usually have good arguments. So we'll at least listen to you. But it's true. There are a lot of human beings right now who want to just kill and destroy. We have AR machine guns. And now there's an idiotic Republican push to put AR-15 machine guns in schools. Nitwits. And that's charitable. We have trophy hunters and nitwits, another group of nitwits, who want to destroy the ecosystems by killing off apex predators. This flies in the face of intense research. So how does it come back to me, the average person? I have to abide by the covenant of my interrelational, and that means I cannot, and I will not give you any quarter. I can't do it. We have to build people up. Why do you think so many young men are violent in this culture? There are many sociological reasons. Okay, we know all that. But what I've seen work so well is for an older man to say, you stop that right now. You don't treat that girl that way. You don't treat that animal that way. You don't treat your sister that way. You do not treat a woman that way. You learn mercy. We have now millions of species that are on the brink of extinction. Don't believe what I'm saying. Go do the research. Not one or two species, millions. Every day we're losing species. And so we have this biodiversity in crisis. And think about it. You can imagine that a very rich tapestry of parts in a system make a beautiful system, just like in a marriage, just like in a love relationship, friendship. So many beautiful elements and dimensions and parts that make it work. If you start pulling out those parts, you're deleting them, who's going to fill that up? What's going to happen? Think it through. So, Nazarita, what I would say back to you is that mercy and compassion and empathy are much more than words, as you say. And I would say they're much more than virtues. I would say that they are absolutely instrumental, enabling ways of being, of life. I saw a little bee struggling the other day. It was on the sidewalk. And I knew that he'd been poisoned. He'd been poisoned because somebody at the church, and I'm not going to say the denomination because I'll make people upset, at the church decided they were going to make their lawn really green and spray Monsanto products, glyphosate. Pesticides kill bees. He was struggling to live his life. Years ago, you and I were driving, and somebody had just built soccer fields, about 10 of them. Oh, and they were beautiful. Oh, and the boys and the girls were having fun. Oh, and the grass was green. And all the parents were out there cheering them on, and everybody was happy. And the ecosystem upon which it sat had been eradicated, destroyed, annihilated. Let's look at the truth of it. And we saw a squirrel desperately trying to pull his dying squirrel brother off the road. He'd been hit. He was dying. And the squirrel was trying to pull his brother, his sister, to safety, back to a 2-foot-wide barrier of weeds and dirt that had been left after the oppressors came with their bulldozers. He was trying to protect the life of his brother. But people don't want to think of it that way. Every time I walk in a neighborhood, if I see a clean, beautiful lawn, I already know it's been sprayed. And I would never permit my 7-pound service dog to walk any near such a yard with his little baby feet and his little baby legs. But when we saw a yard that was full of beautiful weeds, grown rocks, plants, bees, and butterflies, I said, let's go in there. So what do we do, Nazarita? How do we pull these lost virtues? They're only words now. It's like the ribbon. A lot of cancer research, and I started doing this research on of the cancer research many years ago, and I came to find out that a lot of the Susan B. Komen Foundation research had been built on the backs of research on dogs and primates, my evolutionary cousins. Yeah, well, we have cancer. Oh, and cancer's bad. We're going to go out and walk, and we're going to make money, and we're going to wear these stupid ribbons so that we can be healthy. And we're going to do it by annihilating life. The resentment I'm talking about, that is, it's a trick in being in which we kill to live. We annihilate to live. We destroy to live. We kill ourselves to live. What do you think pharmaceuticals and the pharmaceutical industry is all about? If you watch an ad, do this, everybody. Watch an ad. And they'll show a man or a woman taking a new pharmaceutical drug that's just been rolled out that your insurance will pay for and Medicare will pay for. And then you have a big smile because you can have sex again and you can be healthy and happy again. And then it'll list the 35 side effects. There are side effects to psychotropic drugs. I became an expert in psychotropic drugs. Psychopharmacology, it's a science. You can learn it, read it. And you trade one death for another death. And every client I ever had, bar none, every single one of them, said, Dr. Boileau, get me off these drugs. Please help me get off these drugs. I don't feel like myself. I'm dying. And it comes back to the covenant. So how do we live this covenant, Nazarita? How do we live the covenant with a vegan kitchen? How do we live that? What do we do?
You know, I really love the author Eknath Ashwaran, and my thinking nowadays has really gone back to the way that he used to talk when he would give his lectures, satsang, whatever you would call them, and so he would describe the inner being, the mind, the emotions, as being like a country that, who is the ruler of your country, and he said a lot about the mind. The mind is like the monkey mind. It wants all these things. It builds up a scenario which makes you feel justified to do things and participate in things that are violent, pleasure seeking for only yourself. That's the way the mind is. And as long as the mind is in control and the senses, then you're at the mercy of your senses. So I thought about this because, again, linked with Gandhi, Gandhi's nonviolent resistance actually led to the independence of his country. And I think that in ourselves, a lot of people, they express the need to be free. They want to be free. But they tend to couple freedom with the right to do harm, to do violence, to participate in violence, to let others do violence and stand back and watch. And so I was thinking in ourselves, that's where we have to go. And we have to say, we have to address and have civil disobedience to our senses. And we have to say, the senses, the mind that says, why don't you have that little piece of chicken? It's only a little piece. You can only have it this week, and we can have a little fish. You need omegas. And then we're lulled into this state of participating in violence. So civil disobedience inside to achieve freedom, which is what every spiritual person wants to achieve, freedom, union with that life force, you have to practice civil disobedience in yourself. You have to say, no, I'm not going to have that because that's the product of violence. And the mind will fight so hard. It will give you all kinds of ways that you should be thinking, well, you know, my friend eats meat. I can't tell them not to eat meat. I don't want to be rude. And so if you fall for that, the mind is actually in control of your country, which is yourself, and you will never have freedom. You'll be ruled by despots, which are, if you don't control your senses, then you become despotic. And so that is something that I've really been thinking of, that's where we have to go. It's the embrace of everything that we want to embrace. It's just that we don't know how to achieve that goal. And that goal first starts in ourselves of not listening to these pseudo-spiritual things that say, if you do this chant, the world will heal, or do this chant. And believe me, I did plenty of malas and plenty of chanting, but without action, they really mean nothing. And here's a great quote. This is from, believe it or not, Eknath Ashwaran. Don't think the purpose of meditation is to go deep into consciousness, wrap a blanket around yourself and say, how cozy, I'm going to curl up here by myself and let the world burn. Not at all. We go deep into meditation so that we can reach out further and further to the world outside. And that, I think, is something that we should all concentrate on. If we want something, if we want freedom, if we want kindness and compassion to ourselves, we want people to be loving, and yet we refuse to be loving, compassionate, merciful to others, then we will not receive what we desire, and we will become angry, frustrated, bitter, and keep participating in violence. So that's the first thing. In a vegan kitchen, what are you going to embrace? Are you going to embrace dead flesh? Are you going to let others embrace dead flesh? Are you going to bring violence into your home? Or are you going to embrace what you really, really, your heart wants, which is kindness, generosity, love, all the beautiful virtues that everybody, if you ask, would want. And yet it comes through the practice of denying the senses that want to sway you to do something that you know is not right in the interest of a pseudo-spirituality. And it just can't be. It just can't be. So that's what I think. It's like if you saw a rotting piece of meat, something dead, roadkill, and then you saw a beautiful bunch of ripe peaches, which would you choose? I think most people would choose the peaches. And they're vibrant, they're fresh, they're alive. Because that aliveness gives you more life. The deadness gives you more death.
Well, here we are, speaking strongly. And this is, I actually agree with your report about Ashwaran. You see, it's like the ribbon. A lot of people go to church, they say their prayers, they say their blessings. People go to the mosque, they go to the synagogue, they go to their sanghas, blah, 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 but they do nothing. They do nothing. Tithing, writing little checks at the end of the year is not enough. We have to have an inversion. I call it a conversion. It's a complete conversion. It means you get up in the morning. It's like having a good marriage. It's like having a good friendship. It's like serving the people in your life. Wake up in the morning and you have the first thing in your brain should be, how am I going to serve others today? The first thing, not what's in it for me today. How am I going to serve the world today? That should be the first thought, and that should be the last thought. It's the only way. It's the only way to live the covenant. This, you want to be religious? This is religious. You want to be spiritual? This is spiritual. You want to meditate? This is meditation. You want to be nonviolent? You want to engage in nonviolent resistance? Every day Gandhi did this. Every day Martin Luther King Jr. did this. First thought of the day, last thought of the day. It's a conversion. We have to change. I want to thank everybody for being on the show. We will be back next week. Thank you to Nazarita. Thank you to me. Be well, and let's get busy.